Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, I'm Abe Thompson. This is the New Cyber Frontier podcast. I'm here coming to you from the Colorado Springs campus of Secure Set Academy, where we do cybersecurity boot camps and training. I'm standing in for the eminent Chris Gorog, our regular host here, on the world's most popular cyber podcast. We have today a special guest, Mr. Jason Bove. Did I say it right there?
It's Bove.
Bove, excellent. Adds the more flair, actually, obviously, when you say it right. He's a program and account manager for iStonish. What can you tell me about the basic drive for iStonish, what they're up to, and then we'll talk some more about you.
Sure. So iStonish started about 27 years ago as an IT placement firm, staff augmentation. And while we still do that, it's one of three towers of business that we have. The first is staff augmentation. The next is contact center solutions, 24/7 hosted IVR. And the third is managed services and managed security services for institutions that need some assistance with IT.
Excellent. What drove you toward iStonish? How'd you end up here?
Well, it's an interesting kind of path. I started off my career doing IT support for MCI in the Garden of the Gods here in Colorado Springs. From there, was able to grow into the Department of Defense, where I rose up through kind of the ranks of managed IT services and IT service management. Got into the realm of project and program management for large-scale, widespread organizations that have a lot of geographically separated units.
So a lot of enterprise work.
Exactly, and especially in Department of Defense, where you need to keep touch with satellites that are really all the way across the face of the Earth is where all your stations are. Keeping IT and connected between all those different points, and then moved in back into the private sphere and found a program with iStonish where they were taking on support of the County Department of Human Services in offices all across the state of Colorado. So instead of many IT offices across the face of the planet, we had a bunch of offices right here in Colorado.
Sure. And that's refreshing to kind of get some exposure to some non-DOD work, having myself grown up in DOD, and then, as you said, your experience, was that as civilian, or did you do some military as well?
All in contracting, all together, about 8 years as a contractor in IT for the Department of Defense.
And so you talked about it now, the opportunity to be in a scaled-down enterprise, but with similar challenges, I would presume?
Yeah, and it's very interesting. The work that we do at iStonish ranges from small businesses that just need some IT support and some IT help, to businesses that they have core IT staff, but perhaps they have a project going on. Say they have the need for after hours or weekend support, that their business has grown into that kind of a need or that kind of a model. Or they need some enterprise applications development, staff augmentation, really anything that iStonish does.
Now, had the original goal always been sort of to be in the IT services, or when did you kind of see the more for the addition of sort of a more cybersecurity related activity as well?
Very good question. When I worked for MCI back in the 90s, there was a big push for enterprise consolidation.
Yeah.
And it made sense. While it was going on, there you had a lot of change-averse people who were used to just calling their local IT guy, having them come down and fix their problems.
Static conformists, right?
Exactly. And so that was something that the model wasn't really sustainable. You just had to have more and more people on site to support your personnel. So to go to an enterprise consolidated model was where I saw the trend going for IT. And managed IT services is just that. You're able to get exactly the type of support during the hours that you need it, really focused, spearheaded, dialed right into what you need, and you're only paying for the resources that you use instead of having the overhead of full-time employees.
Sure. Have you seen a growth in the customers having bought into that concept and realizing that's something they need to do if they're going to do it effectively?
Yes and no. It depends on the industry and it depends on the individual businesses.
Interesting.
Some of the businesses are perfectly happy with the model where they have those individual dedicated personnel. They have their developers, their DBAs, you name it, and that works for them. There are others that have found a benefit to going to a shared model or a project-based model, and that tends to work pretty well. It's definitely more of an agile approach, and it's something that, especially for those organizations who take the plunge, I think they find that they're able to have access to a larger group of resources and a bigger group brain, if you will, than just your one or two kind of IT guys that you might employ.
Well, and let's put a bit of a human face on it in a minute, but before that, let's go to our first break for a sponsor.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So I talked about putting sort of a human face on that issue, and I can greatly appreciate this having been an IT user, through my Navy career. There was something to be said for having the flexibility of knowing who your IT guy was and having him come down and you're being able to reach out and touch him. Mm-hmm. But with managed IT services, there's a bit of a paradigm shift and a change. How do you see the successful way of moving people through that paradigm into managed services?
Sure. Also another very good question, because you will always have those individuals who are just more comfortable having that more personal rapport, that contact with whom they have a relationship, they trust that individual. So the best approach is one that leverages the best aspects of both whenever possible. It isn't always going to be possible to be on site with a customer for a customer that prefers that kind of contact. But if you're able to work closely with teams to ensure continuity between your different resources, whether they be IT technicians or engineers, DBAs or developers, to really be able to have it to where whenever somebody has an issue, they're going to get the same answer no matter who they talk to. And oftentimes the people they talk to, it's going to be still a small set. So doing this where you have too many resources can be a bad thing, because then you lose trust a little bit with a client who really is used to just dealing with one or two people. Not being afraid to assign those one or two people, but knowing that you also need to leverage ITIL best practices and have it where all your issues come into a single point of contact, and then maybe that person that takes that intake assigns the interactions to specific resources from there.
And really just showing them the value in making the difference, sort of the transformation piece.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes perfect sense. And so in your role as a program and account manager within the ISONIS organization, how does your day play out? What is your individual mission?
Sure. For me, it's finding the clients that really have a need. Everybody's got something that keeps them up at night, but becoming the trusted advisor and establishing the relationship to where if they have some sort of an IT issue or something that they perceive as IT, even if it's AV or something along those lines, that if you're the trusted person that they call because you've been able to deliver for them in the past, then they're going to call you when they need those solutions. And even if it's not something that I have experience with or the ability to deliver directly, being able to have that rapport is very important.
Well, and that gets back to sort of that age-old model, and you think about you have a guy.
Yep.
And there's something to be said for that. Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Now, as I think of, and as we always try to address sort of the issues of the day and the and obviously with a cybersecurity perspective. Mm-hmm. You and I had briefly discussed sort of your concern about whether companies are willing to sort of pull back the curtain and see how they're doing in cybersecurity. Can you kind of talk to me about that problem and what you see as some potential solutions?
Sure. At Astonish, we've got a really good mix of both private and public sector clients. The public sector clients, we've had a lot of success in doing IT and security assessments, especially security assessments. These are in-depth. They involve several different tools. I think that if you have a cybersecurity firm that really only leverages one or possibly two tools, you're not really getting the full picture.
Sure.
You need somebody on site to do the physical assessment, to jiggle the doorknobs and look under keyboards for post-it notes with passwords. You need somebody to check the patch status, the foundational resilience of your infrastructure, your business policies and practice, physical security, door locks, that sort of thing, and make sure that you're really getting a good holistic view. And the public sector clients, they're responsible for, to their constituents, for ensuring that their cybersecurity is up to par. So you have constituents that are raising the issue and asking the right questions, really kind of forcing some of those public sector clients to find out where they stand. We got to know so we know where our risks are, what are our most critical remediation items, and how do we get those taken care of.
Sure.
On the private side, you either have people who are all in, they're doing this, it's a regular recurring thing, but those are few and far between.
Sure.
Typically what we find on the private side is that the IT budget, especially in the security realm, has not scaled appropriately over the past several years as the risks have scaled.
Sure.
And so to take that dive and to find out where you stand is something that there's a degree of reluctance to do.
Well, at SecureSet, in our curriculum, we teach security culture, which is sort of that whole facet of being able to go in to the leadership of an organization and help them understand that they have a need in an area where they may not make profit. You know, you invest money.
Exactly.
To defend, but that's not a profit area. And so, again, there's that paradigm shift, and you've kind of captured that. Are there other reasons that you would foresee or just observe for why folks would have the trepidation to pull back the curtain, as it were?
I think it's that due to the current cybersecurity market, there are literally thousands of tools that you could bring to bear.
Yeah.
And most of those tools are expensive.
Yeah.
They're very costly. And so I think the perception may be that in order to start going down the cybersecurity rabbit hole, it's going to be resource intensive, people and financially. So your resources are really going to be strained if you go down that. And so it's better to just kind of keep your head in the sand if you don't know about it.
with probably tragic consequences, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Right. So what does it look like to go out there and find the people to help you do this assessment?
Mm-hmm.
And what does it look like when you're comparing one versus another?
Yeah, it is a challenge. Especially in the Front Range area here, we have quite a lack of very well-qualified security engineers. And so we do employ security engineers that are able to go out and do this. Mm-hmm. But there are often times where we have to schedule out a month, 2 months at a time just to be able to have the time to wrap up what we're currently working on and dedicate that personnel to really doing a good in-depth assessment and providing those actionable remediation steps in just a very well-prepared deliverable. Getting that done is a challenge. Oftentimes it's a challenge in dealing with some of the clients as well when we've got clients that have various ways of working, whether or not they're going to remediate the issues themselves, perhaps contract with a managed services company to get that done, whether it's Astonish, SecureSet, or any other organization. It's really a challenge to put together a report that checks all the boxes for all the same people.
Sure. Who's doing this well in the Front Range right now?
That's a good question. Astonish, of course, has worked with SecureSet. We think very highly of them. And I also do believe it depends on what you're really looking for when it comes to your cybersecurity assessment.
Sure.
If you are truly looking for something with more emphasis in the audit side, then you definitely want to go to more of an audit firm. These are rooted in the financial services industry and fintech. But if you're looking for more of a focus on IT and foundational resilience, then you really do need to go with an organization that focuses in that area.
Okay, awesome. Now, you talked about the tools being costly. Is it limited to the tools, or is it also the expertise?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. So one of the things that that we do is also what we call a challenge exercise. This is a little bit of a white hat exercise.
Sure.
Where we go into the different facilities, the physical locations. We may walk in and we say that we're from the provider. Now, this is all, of course, with the main IT management staff standing right outside the door ready to come in. We have, at times, had law enforcement involved, usually when we were doing assessments in police stations.
Sure.
Which, by the way, usually the police stations do the best when it comes to physical security.
Yeah, as it should be.
As it should be, exactly. Yeah. But to go in and just say that, hey, we're here from CenturyLink, or we're here from Comcast, and can you let us into the network closet? We need to check our circuit. And you'd be shocked how many times we're able to get in, to get full access to the rack, full access to the switch, the servers, you name it.
There's no shortage of opportunities to constantly remind people about the dangers of social engineering.
And so those are expensive resources, especially
when
you have multiple locations, to be able to go into those locations. So it's the resources to do that. It's frankly, some of the gumption as much as it is the tools.
Oh, sure.
And going through the business policies that exist in the realm of IT to ensure that the policies are in place.
Sure. Let's take a moment and we'll get back to that after check-in with our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
And we're back with New Cyber Frontier. Our guest is Jason Beauvais of Istonish. We were just talking about assessments and why people have trepidation. The other thing that we had discussed briefly in the break was these are entrepreneurs. This is hard-earned money, you know, blood, sweat, tears, etc. Now, some of these may or may not have received a bill of goods, right? They may have been hit before by not getting the full service for, you know, or full service render for what they're asking for. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome that?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we usually employ a multi-tool approach, and mm-hmm. it's one of the reasons why we have an example of our executive summary report up on our webpage.
Good.
And the reason I say that is we've got all these different tools that we use that if a firm were to come in and just use any one of those tools, hand off the reports, and call that a done deal. We do encounter that, and it's not that they're doing anything wrong, it's just that really there should be more. Sure. More is oftentimes more expensive. So if they're looking for an organization that's looking for just a budget solution, they just need somebody to come in and do a Nessus report on their patch status.
Okay.
That's something that can be done, and the report can be delivered, and that's fine, and the resources required to get that done are usually quite a bit lower.
Sure.
But if you really want a holistic view, you've got to have the multi-tool approach.
Yeah.
And you got to understand that in terms of remediating these findings, in terms of really justifying a larger IT security spend in the future, you need something that illustrates exactly what those are in a way that can be understood by those individuals who are in positions to make choices there,
sure.
whether they're writing the checks or just making the decisions that, yes, we need to invest more in this arena. Our IT resources typically, our contacts typically have trouble justifying their larger budgets or having a budget enough to be able to remediate the items once they're found.
Yeah.
So to really have a company come in, you got to make sure that they're able to put that in a format that's understood at the C-level and at the technical level both.
Well, and you talk about a multi-tool solution in those conversations, and on either side of that executive summary report and the proposals are people, right? And certainly it sounds like there's a great need for the right soft skills in both those that are doing the assessment and more specifically those that are unpacking the assessment at the end. Where do you find those folks?
Yeah, what we find is that everyone when we encounter when we're out there doing assessments is party to the exercise.
Yeah.
And the exercise itself, especially we do usually on sites during one or multiple days at these sites. And every individual that we run across is experiencing the, you hear somebody coming in and asking questions and, hey, maybe I was a little uncomfortable, but I wasn't uncomfortable enough to say, can I ask, who's your main point of contact here? Can I help you find someone? And to really, again, challenge them.
Sure.
And so the organizations that go through an IT assessment should become stronger just having gone through the assessment, gone through the exercise, even before they get the reports.
Well, it's a great point to in the discussion to bring this up with regard to a suggestion from Chris earlier. He'd said, if there are listeners out there that are kind of pondering whether they need to make this leap or that really want to make a change, want to be transparent for their own good, let alone that of their stakeholders, what are like the 1, 2, 3 top sort of things that they should do self-help wise before they even leap into sort of the professional help?
Yeah, so I'd say it really starts with participation on policies, business policies, whether that's acceptable use, whether that's a solid password policy, a badge policy for wearing a badge to illustrate that you have a justifiable need to be in a physical area.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different policies that it takes sign off by multiple parts of the organization. Usually it's human resources and IT that need to work hand in hand to ensure that, one, the policies are known, that they're reasonable, that they're adhered to, and that they're updated on a regular basis.
Excellent.
So starting with the policies, and that's something that can be done for lower or very little resource
sure.
cost to an
Low
organization.
Low-hanging fruit, yeah.
Exactly. The next is going to be to take a look at the fundamental basics. Usually when there is malware or when there are breaches, it's related to distinct vulnerabilities, whether that's exploits in software, malware. A lot of those can be checked just to ensure that you've really got the proper defenses up. Starting with a client, of course, the client endpoint is it's the weakest link in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
So to make sure you've got a good solid client in there. It used to be early on when we were looking at patching workstations and getting virus updates that good old McAfee would need to update once a month, right?
Right.
And then it got to the point where it was once a week. Now it's usually every 10 to 15 minutes. That's how fast these things are hitting. And so having a client that's capable of updating at that frequency is essential.
Sure.
Next is going to be firewalls. Make sure that you've got good next generation firewalls. If your firewall really just allows for a whitelist and a blacklist, well, it's better than nothing. There are many, many solutions out there that are low cost, typically, especially for smaller organizations, that are able to get you a very high maturity level in
sure.
enterprise security for low cost.
And just listening to you, it's almost as if you could sit there as a professor and lecture on this, just very articulate flow to this. And in that vein, how might people go out and educate themselves? Because there might be some that get all the way down through, okay, policy, good to go, fundamentals, all right, but even the right clients and tools to use, and then, moving on to firewalls. Where do people go to educate themselves as business owners? To even get to that point?
Yeah, I think the first step is to take a look at the common cybersecurity trends for the specific industry. For example, medical and financial are usually the biggest targets.
Indeed.
And so if you are in the medical or financial, look for those tools that are going to be the best fit for your arena. really get into the threat landscape, really understand what that looks like, and also spend some time within the organization really determining what your threat tolerance is, what's your tolerance for risk, and what's the cost-benefit analysis associated with that tolerance.
Sure, and a lot of folks out there don't realize that the concept of risk avoidance is gone. Mm-hmm. It's really risk tolerance, risk management, risk mitigation. Mm-hmm. So threat landscape.
Yes.
Where can I get a good sense for the threat landscape? What are some publications or places to go?
Sure. I'd start with potentially NSS Labs, a good publicly funded institution that really does establish some very good standards, has some very good information out there. Also, look at the major players in the cybersecurity realm. If you're going to go and check out Fortinet or Cisco, a lot of them will have information on what that threat landscape looks like. And of course, there's some solutions in there. But many of them will also give tools that are sometimes even lower no cost just to begin finding out where you stand.
Sure.
The Fortinet, for instance, has the Cyber Threat Assessment Program, which is a on its own. It's very spearheaded. It's very distinct on boundary. Which is makes it a very good tool, and it is a sales tool for Fortinet, but it also gives you a very, very good report.
Right.
Utilization, risks, what's going on your network, when, and at what times.
Sure, and we, in academia here in the cybersecurity realm, we use the term threat intelligence, and for so long, I think that term had been limited sort of to the military concept or the sort of the government concept, but in reality, all of us need to be threat intelligence analysts to a certain extent and able to find that. So it sounds like you've put your finger on a few good resources, and I'm sure probably from some lessons learned from those that have been in the DoD space and in the intelligence space, as it were. You talked about fintech and, and sort of the financial environment. What's on the horizon that, do you see maybe more secure-minded entities looking at other currencies?
I believe so, yeah. Blockchain is a major movement in the fintech realm.
Okay.
And I believe that it's going to revolutionize just not the world of finances. You know, of course, the big names are going to be your Bitcoin and your Ethereum. But especially Ethereum, you understand that there's more to it than just a currency.
Yeah.
You're talking about a way to track assets and anything of value. That's why Walmart is using it for their chain of stores. It's why IBM Global is using it for all of their shipments. You have the ability to really look in and make some very good both business decisions and even in the more social and humanitarian areas. Recently listened to a podcast where one of the major interests for blockchain comes from the mayor of Haiti during the earthquake. And the reason there is that when the earthquake hit Haiti, all of the records of who owned what land and what properties in Haiti was destroyed.
Wow.
And so rebuilding that from the legacy system has been an exquisite challenge for them. However, if blockchain was deployed and used in this arena to be able to look at that, the distributed nature of it would mean that in order to reestablish that, essentially a database of who owned what property and what buildings were in place, would be as simple as just finding another mining operation or another server on which the blockchain exists and pulling that data.
Well, it's not too unheard of, particularly, you know, because Haiti was thrown way back into the, you know, the dark ages almost in terms of the impact where we see, for instance, in some of the, on the African continent where folks have gone from very primitive tribal communication straight to cell phones.
Right.
So it's not unheard of to see us making this leap. And it sounds like, you know, sort of an area where FEMA might have some insight or any sort of natural disaster area response, this may have some great merit for restoration. And in, you know, in an earlier podcast with another guest, we talked about sort of cybersecurity history and where do we store the lessons we've learned and how do we preserve the intellectual capital that's out there. So there seems to be a drawing together of a number of those things with sort of what you're suggesting in terms of the future there. So Have you had interface with any DoD customers with some of what you're espousing right now?
I left the DoD in 2013.
Yeah.
And so blockchain, of course, was starting to really get some traction then, especially in the Bitcoin realm. But I've been out of DoD for a while. Most
sure.
of my contact has been with either the public sector or private sector.
Okay.
Was recently asked by one of my government contacts whether or not Astonish accepted cryptocurrency. And that got me thinking.
Interesting.
Right now, of course, there were a lot of restaurants that a little ways back were starting to accept Bitcoin as currency. But given the volatility of it,
yeah.
it's hard to charge $5 for a coffee today and have that $5 be worth $5,000 in a year. So it's that much volatility makes it difficult to accept it as
sure.
a currency, but it's an interesting question.
Well, speaking of currency with regard to currency, mm-hmm. You mentioned something when you walked in about
sure.
a big shift. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Sure, sure. I was doing a little bit of reading this morning in the news, and it turns out that the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, who previously had a position on blockchain, that it was essentially a bubble and that it was not really legitimate and would burst and go away. He's changed his position and he now indicates that specifically blockchain is definitely a major player in fintech and is legitimate.
Well, it goes to show you with substantive data, you know, paradigms can be changed, and you know, and good decisions can be made. We can all stand to learn something for sure.
Absolutely.
Something that's near and dear to my heart. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had the privilege of being with Mr. Jason Beauvais from Astonish. He's the program and account manager, one of the program and account managers there at Astonish, and has really brought to light a number of important things for us to think about with regard to how do we secure our organizations, and how, even more importantly, do we know how secure we are. So, Jason, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Indeed.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.